So you can hear all that.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Yeah.
Oh, crap. So I'll stop that then.
And 3, 2, 1. Airship over the American Idol Studios. It's episode 324 of The Side Quest. Sorry about that. How's it going, everybody? I'm recovering from a flu. How's it going, everybody? I'm Dally, your wonderful part. What part of the Triforce was I? Was I Courage?
I think we're just going to call you Patient Zero this week.
How many Patient Zero?
Would you give us something over Skype?
I can try. That those pipes that you guys just heard, Strum.
Yeah, any way you want to pronounce it, really. Like, Cynthia is another common pronunciation in some parts of the United States. Actually, that's me.
Actually, your name on Hero Academy is Steve Storm, and I keep wanting to write Sue Storm.
I can't even get, like, Johnny Storm or nothing.
Well, it doesn't have the alliteration, then.
True.
Yeah, To be fair, I really do love that my name is alliterative, like, way too much. Like, I'm way too proud of that.
Also joining us is Eric Smith.
Hello.
Those are the other two parts of the Triforce of SideQuest. And our special guest this week.
The Ben Master
Stroud.
Sword.
The Master Sword. Ooh, I like that. Ben. Ben Stroud of IndustryGamers.com. You are the Master Sword.
I'm the Master Sword. Fantastic. I'll take that.
Ben fills up our hearts.
Yeah.
Hey.
And Ben can fire from a distance. I don't know where that's going. I'll probably stop with that part of the conversation right now.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be doing... That's my job, Dally. Oh. I'll handle the segues here. Thank you very much.
The horrible segues. The tangents. Segues.
Tangents, that's a word. See? that was one right there. Chalk that one up, everybody.
Drinking game, take a shot. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me, guys.
Yeah, we've been trying to get you on for a while, and I've been a bonehead, and just now got you on. So, yeah.
Better late than never, I suppose.
Totally my fault. I apologize, but we're totally happy to have you on, and I know you're going to be an awesome guest this week.
You think.
And Ben, again, is joining us from IndustryGamers.com. Amongst other things, you are a little bit all over the place, as you've
mentioned. I do way too much nonsense.
You don't sleep, actually. You
what is sleep?
Yeah, what is sleep? So Ben's going to bring a whole new perspective to the episode this week. I think it's going to be a pretty good one. Let's just dive right into what we've been playing. Kind of the traditional warm-up, you know, the first pitch, I guess you could say. Eric, what have you been playing?
Nothing really. I started Warp tonight about 2 hours before the show started, so I could have something new to talk about. And I only played about 2 hours, but I don't know. It's not great.
Huh. I was actually really excited for it. I thought the concept of exploding out of dudes was a pretty good setup for that game.
It has a lot of great concepts. You're a little alien running around. You can warp in and out of people, barrels, but there's just something about it that I don't like.
Hmm. It's controls, or it just doesn't feel good, or...
All of the above.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's no fun.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
Yeah,
I was kind of excited.
I'd still try it if I were you. If you were interested in it, because, you know, it's only $10, I think, so.
Well, every time I look at it, I get, like, a really Explosion Man vibe for some reason. Maybe it's just me exploding out of
it. It's goofy, and it's extremely violent, which is a great pairing. Mm-hmm. You know, the tone is really good, which is the only reason I'm still playing it. But I just don't like the actual playing of the game. Some of the puzzles are just too simple, and then other ones aren't hinted to at all.
Mm.
And I thought it was because I'm an idiot, but I don't know. I don't think it is.
That was something Explosion Man really got right, is they really towed that line between simple yet
challenging. Well, I don't like a lot of Explosion Man either, so.
Oh, really? Oh, well. Yes, well, maybe I'll try it.
Towards the end, Explosion Man, I started getting really frustrated with it.
Oh, well, yeah, I think everybody does, but yeah. That game loses steam, but the overall concept was
I didn't know it was released on Steam.
Oh,
hey.
Everything's on Steam.
No, you're thinking of Explodemon.
Explodemon.
Except Battlefield.
But yeah, I don't know, I'd give it, for the first 2 hours, 3 out of 5, I guess.
Okay.
It's middling.
That's respectable. Yeah,
yeah, it's... I don't love it, but it's not bad.
Maybe I'll try the demo at least first.
Oh, yeah, it's probably a good thing to do. Because especially this game, because the demo is extremely representative of the whole game.
Okay. Is that's Xbox 360 exclusive?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, it's part of the house party, so it's at least exclusive for now.
It's exclusive until it comes out on PS3.
Yeah, it's a EA party
pretty much,
game.
Yeah.
So,
alright.
I don't know if it will ever come out, but chances are.
Okay.
But
I got some Xbox money, so.
Yeah. Other than that, I've just been playing some sports games, as I am wont to do.
Like what? Which ones?
FIFA 12.
Okay.
Good choice.
NBA 2K12.
Good choice.
Dirt 3.
Okay. What's Dirt 3?
What?
What's Dirt 3? I've never heard of that.
Nine straight shows I've talked about it on.
I think so.
Yeah.
So
has NBA 2K12 patched in Jeremy Lin yet?
Oh man.
Can you buy the Lin Sanity DLC?
Oh my god, Steven. Good lord.
Except you don't need to because every 3 days they get roster updates, so.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah, so
I didn't know that. It shows how much I know about sports games.
Yeah, that's something that's been happening since about 2008.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so you're
on like every EA game, yeah. And 2K game. Every one of them.
Oh man. Well, I guess I am.
Welcome to the internet, Steven.
I think the last sports game I really played in earnest was probably the original NBA Jam. So, or at least the last basketball game.
Tournament Edition was better. Hang Time was better.
Does Blitz count?
Blitz
counts.
Thing.
Okay, I'm making sure. That's pretty much how far it's been. N64, baby.
There you go.
All
the original Blitz.
Maybe the...
Yeah!
NFL Blitz.
There we go.
But other than that, I still work my way through the darkness.
The original one?
Yes.
Okay.
And
sounded like you were almost done with it last time I talked to you a few days ago.
I think I'm almost to the end of section 2. And I watched a Giant Bomb feature of Brad Shoemaker playing through his last save in that game. And he was just finishing section 2. And then he played for 2 hours and he was still at least an hour away from the end.
Because I haven't played that game in 5 years. I played it right when it came out, but I kind of remember it only being about 10 to 12 hours long. So
it might be, but I'm only about 6 in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's about how long The Darkness 2 is. So it's confusing.
It's a slow moving game at this point. I've gone back to hell for the second time.
Oh, that's right. You do. I forgot. You do kind of return to that place a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah. And Christ on a cracker, it's not great.
Now the gunplay,
cracker?
Oh, that's a thing.
That's totally a thing.
That is a thing, yes.
Wow, I've never heard of
that. Ben is expert witness testimony right here.
Correct.
Very official. But yeah, I've been thinking about that game since I've been reviewing The Darkness 2 here, so hearing you kind of talk about how you don't think it's that great. It's kind of maybe colored my my once fond memories of that game. I kind of remembered it being better than maybe it was.
Well, the story is amazing, but just playing the game.
And I actually think I mentioned that in, I think I mentioned that in my review, is that the game is that the original Darkness is great up until somebody asks you to actually play it. So
like an Uncharted game, I would rather be watching it.
Sure. Okay.
But yeah, so that's... what about Darkness 2?
Darkness 2 is a game that came out that I've been reviewing.
A video game?
My word.
It is an interactive electronic game experience. Yeah, it's that's actually really good. That's about by the sound of it, like if you were playing the Darkness 2, you'd have beaten it by now. If you instead of Darkness 1, because it's about 6 or 7 hours long, so it's not a super long game.
That's a great thing to me, because the biggest problem I have with Darkness right now is it's too long. It's dragging its feet.
Yeah, the pacing in the Darkness 2 is pretty ferocious too. Like, I played through the whole thing in about 2 days, and I took hefty breaks in between there. But it felt like it just kind of blew past me because I was having so much fun. Because the one thing the story is still pretty great, just like the original Starbreeze game. It was really surprising because I had almost no expectations for the story coming in, because this is Digital Extremes we're talking about made this game, makers of the fine Smallville star-studded Dark Sector. Yeah, so wasn't too expectant of pretty much anything for this game, but it's really fun, and that story is still really, really cool. And that game moves pretty fast, but then it also has a lot of little quiet moments for you to kind of in between. So you kind of it just feels really tightly paced. It feels like you never get tired of the gunplay because they're just sending a million enemies at you. But at the same time, you feel like you have enough time to catch your breath. But then when the shit starts hitting the fan, you can kind of burn through it pretty quickly. I don't know. But that's pretty good. I'm just on like the last stretch of my review of it now. So that'll probably be up as soon as Ryan can edit it. And then people can learn more about it there. But for right now, it's really cool. The co-op campaign actually surprised me a lot too, because I was talking about that before the show started. I tried playing with Dave Voiles, but you can play it single player as well, which is probably not the best way to go through it, but it is totally viable. What was that?
But it is a way to go through.
My phone locked up on me.
Okay. Yeah, it is. It's a way to go through it. And it kind of it's basically the main story, but wrote small. It's because sort of left for Deddy. With like four different characters, they all have different darkness light powers, like diet darkness powers.
Diet darkness.
Diet darkness.
I like that.
It's really good. It's really over the top violence. It's all cartoony looking, unlike the first game, Eric. Which correct me if I'm wrong. The first game was like it was just regular photorealistic kind of attempt. Right?
No, it was. It still had the somewhat cel shaded comic book tone, just not to an extreme that Darkness 2 does.
Yeah,
they're going for the same effect, but they're doing it 5 years later. So,
okay, because the Darkness 2 leans real heavy into the comic booky look to it. It looks a lot like Mark Silvestri's stuff, who did the first 7 issues of the original Darkness comic.
Yeah, shadowing out and everything.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's like literally cross hatching on characters. Like if you
look
at them,
that's pretty neat, actually.
Yeah, it kind of looks like almost a mix between 13, that old PlayStation 2 game, and Valkyria Chronicles.
Okay.
If that makes any sense to anybody?
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, okay.
13 was great, by the way.
What was that?
13 was great, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
Is it? I hear bad things about that game.
No, it's totally bad, but in a good way. That's why it's great.
And actually, that kind of fits with the Darkness 2 a little bit.
You're probably right.
It's like the worst parts of the 90s, or it's like the 90s, which we can all agree was not a great time for comic fiction, for anybody who knows anything about comics. But it's like the best parts of the 90s, and like kind of blown out to, it's sort of what your 13-year-old self thought of 90s comic books written into a comic book game. But the story they tell is really kind of cool, and it's got some weird sort of is he insane, is he not insane stuff, which I'm always a sucker for because I
God damn it, this phone.
All right.
Yeah. Tonight on the side quest, Eric will be playing the part of Stephen Strom. Yeah, I guess I don't have too much else to say about The Darkness 2, unless anybody had any questions about it, but maybe it's just because I've been writing so much about it.
It's relatively shorter than the previous one, correct? Than the
probably
one?
About It's probably about half the length, okay. Maybe about 60% of the length.
Well, it's more of a linear gain, too. It doesn't have that semi-open-ended. Okay.
Right. There is some kind of hub worldy stuff. Not really hub world, but like between missions, you will go to like Jackie's mansion, and you can just kind of walk around and do anything and start missions whenever you want.
I love the flat shading in that place.
Yeah, the mansion looks great. Of all the environments in that game, the mansion really stands out.
Which makes sense because you go there a bunch of times, right?
Yeah, yeah. You kind of go back there enough times, and not enough times where you kind of get tired of going to the mansion and go checking it out. That's kind of the story throughout the whole of the Darkness. You never do anything enough times to make you get tired of it, which I think is a testament to probably how short the game is, but also how you don't feel like any of that time is wasted either. Except during the boss battles, I guess that's the one thing I haven't really talked about is the boss battles in that game are really bad. They just kind of amount to shooting galleries with one dude who's like immune to all of your best powers, and he just jumps around constantly, so you have to shoot him, get three bullets in him, and then he jumps around again, and you put three more bullets in him, and you're basically...
So hang on a second. Are you telling me one of the bosses is House of Pain?
Yes. One of the bosses is House of Pain. One of the bosses is a crane. Like a wrecking ball crane.
That boss looked terrible in the video I saw.
It's pretty terrible. And the crane is definitely the worst one, but they kind of get worse, which is funny because the game ends with not with a boss fight, but just with like kind of this like kind of wave of enemies coming at you, which is when that game is at its best because you can kind of just toy with your enemies with all your different crazy omnipotent superpowers, and that's when it's the most fun, and that's what they give you at the end. So it really ends really strong, but it makes me wonder like why did they think that they needed these like long drawn out bullet sponge shooting galleries in between if they knew that the best stuff that they have, because they must have known it was the best stuff that they have because they put it at the end, I would imagine anyway. I'm kind of curious as to why they even felt that they needed boss fights at all, because they're not very interesting. They don't really play into the story very much. They kind of end pretty cool. The cutscenes all end with Jackie doing some kind of weird execution that all look pretty neat.
Okay. So I got a question for you. Comparing bad boss battles to the rest of a quality game, which is worse, this or Batman Arkham Asylum?
This is way, way worse. At least with Arkham Asylum, they were dudes from comic books that you cared about to an extent. With Darkness 2, they're just sort of almost random thugs that you don't give two shits about. And they're basically, yeah. That's about all I can say about them. Is they're so bland and cheap that there's almost nothing to say about these bosses to explain to you just how bad they are. It's partially just the removal of all your cool powers, but it's a lot of it is just how vanilla they are too, I guess. But racist. Certainly worse than Arkham City. Yeah, super racist on my part. I'm sorry. Super racist playing a game called The Darkness.
Oh man, and dropping insanity jokes. It wouldn't be a side quest. It would be a side quest episode if it wasn't for racism.
Mm-hmm. If Steven Strum didn't say something racist over the course.
Something inadvertently racist.
Inadvertently racist, yeah. And if Eric didn't call me racist about something that wasn't racist, only to lead me into saying something accidentally racist.
So you had a Kinect?
Yeah, I got a Kinect a long time ago, but I haven't really played it until this weekend. A friend of mine had a birthday party, like I said earlier. Before the podcast started. So we played some Happy Action Theater. That game is super fun.
It's not even
45 minutes.
It's not even a game, right?
It's a series of barely mini games. Like there's maybe about a dozen of them that they're not really mini games so much as they are just
mini experiences.
Tim Schafer's version of Mario Party.
Like even less gamey than that.
Oh
like,
yeah, I know even that. I mean, but that's like the best example you're gonna get, in my opinion. Or probably. Maybe like one of those like Hasbro Family Game Night kind of nonsense games.
Maybe
the ones that nobody's ever heard of.
Mm-hmm. Or played.
Or played, exactly.
You know what? The closest thing I can think of, the closest comparison I can come to is like the original Game Boy camera with the printer. You guys remember that?
Oh yeah, I had one of those. I think I still do.
Oh, you did? That's awesome.
Somewhere.
Right. I never owned one, but my friend in like you guys better not make fun of me for this, but my friend in daycare had one.
Oh my god, that's so, we are so making fun of you now.
Where it's like adding video filters and stuff. There's no real objective to it. It's kind of like that, but with 3D graphics, and but that being said, it's incredibly fun. It is, like I said, for about 45 minutes, because once you go through each different mode, you have gone through that mode. There's a one where it's just a bunch of balloons on screen, and it recognizes that you're touching the balloons, that you're trying to pop the balloons, and that's cool up until like you've done it and you know, like, yeah, it's about as fun as actual balloons up to a point. But there are certainly some that are better than others, like a little thing that makes you look like you're dancing in front of a bunch of Double Fine characters and stuff like that. But it was the perfect sort of experience to have at this party, when we had a bunch of dudes that I didn't quite know, and some girls and stuff, just who maybe don't play video games outside of the latest sports game, and Animal Crossing, maybe a little bit higher level than that.
Great game.
I can't speak to Animal Crossing fans' level of quality, but yeah. Happy Action Theater is really good. The only thing is, and I think this is kind of the sentiment throughout the party, is it would entertain you a lot longer if you were drunk than what
was. Wasn't that Tim Schafer's idea?
Yeah,
that it was hits and drunk people.
It was like
Tim Schafer's the gay version of like Jason Segel. You guys know that, right?
Oh my god, yeah, totally. You're so right.
I don't think he designed it for drinking. I think he designed it for kids. But since we're adults, we turn everything into drinking. And therefore,
the story behind Happy Action Theater is actually that they were making Sesame Street, their other Kinect game, for kids, and then they found all these like weird graphical hiccups and things that they could do with it, and they decided, well, let's make a game. They literally set out to make a game designed for drunk people in Happy Action Theater. I think Eric's right. I think that is something he literally said once, and it definitely feels like it. Yeah, I could swear that there is a video out there.
One of the guys, pretty sure he said that. Giant Bomb.
I think he said it to somebody on Giant Bomb. So
we'll bug him next time, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get Tim Schafer on the show just to confirm that, and then kick him off immediately.
Oh, that would be fun.
I wonder if Tim Schafer would appreciate the comedy behind it. Yeah. But it was super fun. It was perfect for the atmosphere that I was in. And
hold on. I can see the question right now. Okay, here. Sorry, I'm cutting you off, Steven, like you cut everybody else off. The question is, Tim, listen, we're so thankful to have you on. And listen, you know, the amount of success that Double Fine Adventure has gained on Kickstarter is amazing. Did you design Happy Action Theater to get drunk?
Yes.
Thank you.
Or just like we're just doing an interview with him, and just like the random question out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Hit him up on the text interview. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then never address it ever again.
Exactly.
We shall never speak of this. I also played the Gunstringer, and between the two of them, I have had a lot more fun playing Happy Action Theater than I have played playing the Gunstringer. And I really like the Gunstringer, so that should maybe say something to how much fun I had playing Happy Action Theater, if you can call it playing.
But you're over that.
That does say something.
What?
That does say something. It's a great game, Gunstringer.
Oh, no,
I heard
you, Ben. Eric was saying something.
I don't even remember what I said.
Well, I was going to say, that's one of the games that I've really wanted to check out, Gunstringer.
That's good, too. So.
Yeah.
Those are my boys at Twisted Pixel. Yeah, you played it, Ben?
Yeah, I have. Gunstringer?
Yeah.
Good time. I don't know why I played it. I just saw guns, and I was like, wait, somebody
guns
designed something
strings
for the Kinect. Well, yeah, the strings were much more. I definitely wanted that more. But, you know, it had guns, so I guess that was all right. No, the game, I mean, you know, I just said, okay, so they haven't done anything serious-ish yet for the Kinect, and don't even bring in that horror game thing. Nobody cares about that.
Rise of Nightmare?
Yeah, don't even, no. And especially
that, don't even bring it up.
That Blackwater game, that was just, ugh. But That was terrible. And so I'm looking at Gunstring. I'm like, okay, so this is something somebody over the age of 14 could enjoy. And they can. It's a good game. Parents will buy it for their kids. Older people like to play it.
Parents will buy it for their kids, not realizing that there is jokes about bestiality in there.
Well, it's like letting your kid watch National Lampoon movies from the 80s.
I guess. Like that I played that at the party, too, and that really caught a lot of people off guard. Like, so not exactly graphic. It's like puppet sex, but it is puppet bestiality sex. Yeah. I don't know. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for that.
That was a good one.
Segway.
Anything else, Steven?
Not really. I played some more Dragon Age 2 a little while ago, but I haven't really touched more.
We're not talking about Dragon Age 2.
I'm not going to talk about Dragon Age 2. So.
Don't talk about Dragon Age 2.
All right, let's not talk about Dragon Age 2.
So how about Dragon Age 2? No, just kidding. All right, well, again, you tend to play more than any of us, and we're always jealous of you.
Me?
Yeah, the life of a college student.
I do play a lot of games, but I've actually after my weird Dragon Age like binge, I kind of stopped playing games for a little bit, and I kind of
by the list of 5 games on here.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, 5 games as opposed to the 15 I usually have in, I suppose. But this week I'm going to start picking up a lot of games. I get Syndicate tomorrow, and Alan Wake's American Nightmare, and the Vita comes out on Wednesday. It's going to be crazy. I'm supposed to have a copy of Binary Domain coming on the 28th. Man, I don't know where I'm going to find time.
I could talk about some Vita games, but
yeah,
we could save that for the end.
We'll save it for the end. Cool. Well, I will chat a little bit about what I've been playing. I am plowing through my backlog right now because I want to make sure I clear out enough space on my shelves for a lot of these great new games that are coming out. So I went and played. I had this old copy of Lego Indiana Jones, the original Adventures, I think it was called, sitting on my shelf. I don't even remember how or where I got it. So I said, I'm going to pop this in and check it out. So put it in there in the old Xbox 360 and realized, wow, this is a lot like Skylanders.
Oh, no.
In that it or I should say Skylanders is a lot like this, in that it's completely simple aesthetic. Controls are really basic, although I don't like the controls very much. There's actually some weird configuration stuff. I don't know if you could remap them or not, but it's definitely made for kids, but I don't know. I'm not super enjoying it yet. So I'm a couple hours in, or about a couple chapters in right now, so I'll see how far.
Did you try playing it with your daughter at all?
Not Lego Indiana Jones, because she's only 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've never ever played a Lego game in my entire, at least none of these licensed Lego games. I played like Lego Island when it first came out, but I didn't know if that was within that chronological range.
The canon of Lego games.
The canon of Lego games. I mean, I didn't know if 2 years old was old enough for Lego licensed games.
Well, the controls are kind of awkward in that the button layout and configuration just doesn't quite make sense compared to every other game out there. So,
They better get it right soon because they've just announced that they're going to make like 20 more of them for Star Wars.
I know. So that's the Lego game. And then I went back in and started playing Modern Warfare 2, which Eric was nice enough to highlight in my in the Google Doc. I had another game that – okay, so I played the multiplayer to heck on this one, but I never went through the single-player campaign. I figured, I'm going to pause the single-player campaign and put this game away for good.
Put it to bed, if you will.
Put it to bed, I guess you could say. And after playing that campaign, it's definitely shorter than the original Modern Warfare, Call of Duty 4. But I did like it. I liked the visuals were spectacular, even back like a couple years ago compared to like today's standards. Of some of the stuff we're seeing today, but visuals are phenomenal.
60 frames.
Yeah, 60 frames per second. Everything was super smooth, and it played really well, even on like the hardcore and veteran difficulties. It's not super hard, but it definitely offers a challenge. Although the there are these Modern Warfare 2, and I don't know enough of Modern Warfare 3, but Modern Warfare 2 is it's almost set up like the monster arenas. where you'll get from one room to the next and have to plow through a bunch of enemies that are in there before you go on to the next room. So, yeah, that's kind of eh. But overall, I'm really surprised how much I enjoyed that campaign to the point where I'm almost itching to play Modern Warfare 3 before Mass Effect hits the old mailbox over here. So
that'll take you like a day.
Yeah, definitely. So that's what I've been playing. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Steve.
I was just going to say you've got plenty of time before Mass Effect. That's not till March, so.
It's 2 weeks away.
It's 2 weeks away, and we're supposed to be getting a review copy. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's going straight to Ryan Gann, though. So.
Yeah, I need to
bug someone at EA about that.
Yeah.
We don't do reviews, but we still bug them.
Oh, yeah. Why not? you guys are definitely respected enough. They should be sending you guys stuff.
What are you talking about?
Pinnacles of the industry, sir.
Pinnacle of the industry. So that's what I've been playing. Ben, so we saved the best for last.
I don't know about best. For literally no good reason, I decided to take COD 4, MW2, and MW3 and do a speed run through of the series.
Welcome. See, that's good.
And Modern Warfare.
I don't know why.
Call of Duty 4 is still
the best. COD 4 is still the best.
That's amazing.
The fun part about playing all three in less than 2 days was that I can't tell the difference. I mean, it's really, really. COD 4 is great. I love it. It's one of the best games out there. It got the Modern Warfare thing going on. You know, that's what EA and Activision are trying to control right now. But, I mean, you play Modern Warfare 2 and you're like, this is fun. Then you play MW3 and you're like, this is fun. But, I mean, I still think the best mission out of any of those games
all
was when
up.
You get to do – yes, all gillied up. Thank you. It's just so fun. So I did a speed run through of that. I was like, I don't know why I did. I just actually, what I'm doing is I'm taking all my the way I do games is I play a lot. Obviously, I get a lot, I play a lot, and that kind of stuff. And I hardly ever keep my games. The only ones I ever keep are the ones I absolutely love and respect. Now, yep. COD, I do that because it's a big series. I actually do respect the fact of how much, you know, work and effort they put into the games. But I've decided for no other reason than just because we're sort of in a dry spell right now and I don't do reviews that I'm going to go through my entire my list, and I've got like 20, 30 games, something like that. And I'm just going to go from whatever the first one in the series is. So, next I'm actually going to be doing all my since I did the COD games, I'm going to be doing all the Rockstar games I own. So I have Grand Theft Auto 4 and Red Dead Redemption. And I'm pretty sure some of my old PS2 stuff's around, so I'll probably play those too.
Nice.
But
I did that that very same thing you're talking about doing right after Christmas, after I was done with Sweet Tour. And I got to tell you, that is a great feeling.
It really is. It is. I started with let's see. I did the Halo games. I did all the Assassin's Creed ones for the week before Revelations came out, and doing that sort of angered me because Revelations was nowhere near as good. It's a good game, but it's just forgettable out of the series. And then I don't know if you guys know,
coming this year.
Yeah, I'm actually,
which I'm hyped for.
I am hoping that they just get back to the series as it should be. Not adding all this nonsense and weird locales. They have the formula perfect from Brotherhood. It is literally perfect. I mean, the bombs and stuff I never used in Revelations whatsoever. You know what I mean?
Okay. And I hear that from a lot of people, really.
Yeah.
I think I like Revelations a lot more than the average person, but, well, we've talked about that before on this show from my perspective anyway, so.
And then the game I'm actually playing the most, and I've been doing this for a while, is it's a game called World of Tanks. It's wargaming. They're out of Russia, actually, and they've got a studio in San Francisco.
They had a huge presence at E3.
Oh, my God, that was awesome. All the tanks and everything. I'm
all
a huge
the
history
chicks.
It was wild.
Oh, who cares about those? It was a tank.
I've heard this name before, but I have literally zero idea.
Neither do I! And I saw it at E3 for like 3 days straight.
Well, here's the fun part. That game, they really took the concept of free-to-play and said, all right, let's do free-to-play, and they made an actual, a good game out of it. I mean, my friends and I've been in a gaming team. I've been running one since, I was young. The gaming team I run's been around for like 10 years, and we sort of do our own thing. It's sort of what led me to the Ace Combat gig I did at E3. But we do military games, and World of Tanks we picked up because we're all history nerds. A couple of the guys on the group are one of them works for the National Archives. They're all history majors. You know, they're not as exciting versions of Indiana Jones. you know, they're just lazy versions. But we play this World of Tank game, and it's free. You don't have to put any money into it. You can get all the cool stuff, or you can pay some money. I've actually probably put more into that game than I have any of the paid ones. And that's saying a lot because Fallout 3 in New Vegas, I've bought every DLC for that thing. And yeah, I bought it. I didn't get handed it. I bought it. And World of Tanks is just it's a fun game. I mean, they're really showing you how free to play. I mean, if we in the next 3 to 4 years don't see more games like that, I'm just going to be like, well, gaming industry's dead, because it feels like the way to go. I mean, you've seen another studio, Zombie. They're doing Blacklight Retribution now. They've never been too well known in gaming, but I mean, if you look at their titles, but this one is a free to play game. It's their creation. I mean, it's looking really good. I mean, should be pretty cool to see what happens with that title. But if these games put more success, especially when you see like the big SOE titles, Sony Online Entertainment, all their stuff's going free. World of Warcraft, first 20 levels are free. So free-to-play is sort of becoming more legitimate. If you guys check out World of Tanks, if you know anything about World War II tanks, rolling around in a King Tiger, which is a Tiger II, biggest tank that they used in World War II, is a very, very happy feeling. So that's sort of what I've been playing.
I just want a full controller like goddamn, what's that game? For Xbox?
Oh, Steel Battalion.
Steel Battalion, that's right.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, it's keyboard. It's WASD to run around. You use your mouse to traverse the turret, click the button. I mean, it's pretty – I mean, this game is completely spot on. They have the ammo right. They have the speed, the ability of your tank, traverse settings, the armor plating, where you can penetrate. If you hit a guy in the front armor – and like, let's go for the real ones right now. If you hit a guy with, if you've got like an M4 Sherman, everyone knows what a Sherman is here, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you take Sherman, and you're like 500 yards away, and you shoot a King Tiger in the front armor. That round's gonna bounce off the thing. But if you're lucky and you're like 200 yards and pretty close up, and you shoot him right where the line is for the commander's hatch, there's like a little viewport. You hit him there, you're gonna do damage. So this game really does it as realistic as possible, and that's why we love it, because it's arcadey enough, but it's real.
That's kind of awesome. What I mean?
It's like Ace Combat, except for tanks.
It actually sounds to me a lot like Mech Warrior with tanks, almost.
Oh, God, yeah, you're right.
Mech Warrior. God, I want Mech Warrior 5.
There is a lot of cross-pollination on that. Like, all the Mech Warrior guys, especially the what was that Xbox Live game that was it wasn't a mech warrior.
Mech Assault?
Trenched?
No.
Iron Brigade?
Not new. It's old. They killed the servers, like, last year.
Chrome Hounds.
Yes, Chrome Hounds. Same concept, except this one's real and that one isn't.
Huh. Well, that sounds super interesting. I feel like free-to-play stuff has really come into its own in these last couple of years.
Not yet. Give it 2 or 3 years.
Maybe I misphrased it. I feel like.
Yeah, we feel like that too.
I feel like blank.
Insert phrase here.
Insert phrase.
Whoa.
Ah, well.
Every time I get a notification.
Sorry about that.
Cuts out. Like, it cuts out my mic because it's plugged in on my jack and it goes to my computer. Oh. So I hear it's weird. I don't even know.
I guess it's a sign.
We'll take a break right here.
Yeah, let's take a break.
We'll come back in a minute.
And we're back.
Okay, I guess just like that. I love daily
just like that.
Sudden intros. Okay, we're going to move on to our heavily Sony featured news week.
It is, isn't it? I'm kind of looking it over right now.
Well, I kind of did it intentionally, but I guess Ben wanted to talk about more than just Sony stuff, so we'll do that.
Can I crash the party with Nintendo's 5 million sales figures?
Well,
ooh,
yeah.
You went there.
I want to hear about that a little bit, actually.
Who was it? So Nintendo through, what was it, Media Create, one of the big firms out there that does all the analytics. Apparently, this is cool. You know how we all thought the 3DS wasn't doing good?
Well, a while ago I thought that.
A while ago. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty
it
bad.
It wasn't doing good.
Yes.
It wasn't doing good. And, well, now it is. We saw in 52 weeks, so full year, they sold 5 million units.
In Japan.
That beat out, yes, in Japan. In Japan only, not America, just Japan. And this is cool because not only did it beat out what the DS was able to do when it first came out, it beat out the Game Boy Advance. Hari crap. So that was really, yeah. Like, I came across that little piece and I was like, what? You kidding? So
it's not by much, but it did happen.
It really isn't, but they did it, which, I mean, considering how bad of a lag that they had,
yeah.
I mean, that just...
And the first 20 weeks were laughable.
LOL, what 3DS?
Yeah, exactly. That was when it was actually legitimate to say the 3DS has very little chance of being successful.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
they cut their price.
Yeah,
so
cut the
so
price.
My question is, yeah, is it, I think you were about to just say it actually, but my question was, how much of this is the price cut and how much of it is the fact that there are actually games
it's
worth
both.
Playing on it now?
It's 100%.
It really is both. I mean, you look at most consumers and like you talk to just parents that don't know a darn thing about games that have kids. They go to like a GameStop or a Toys R Us or whatever that sell these consoles. They're going to see a new DSi is $169.99 and they're going to see a 3DS is $169.99. So then if a salesperson is at least somewhat competent, they just have to say, oh, this one plays the new games plus the old ones, and it's the same price. So, I mean,
they're not shopping at GameStop.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, especially because they're in Japan.
No, hey, my local GameStop is pretty awesome. I like them. They know their stuff. I don't even have to walk in. They're like, they can talk to me about stuff that even I haven't heard, and that's I don't even know how it's possible. But yeah, I guess I'm terrible at my job. But no, they're cool guys. Anyways, yeah, the price change definitely is probably I think the bigger factor. But it's at least in the U.S. it's one of those things. It really is hard to gauge because you look at how 3D Land, like Super Mario, I mean. That thing just sold like hotcakes.
In Japan, Super Mario 3D Land and Monster Hunter Tri-G came out in the same week.
Whatever it was.
And after those two games came out, they saw a 200% increase in sales from weeks henceforth.
Well, that's what those titles do. They're console sellers. And sort of like how... go ahead.
No, yeah, go ahead. I was going to lead off somewhere else.
I was just going to say, like, Xbox is terrible. I mean, Microsoft's given up there, but, you know... 2007, they sold a ton of consoles just because of Ace Combat 6, which is a huge franchise in Japan.
And so, then 2008, they got a sales bump because of Tails.
Oh, yeah, you were correct on that one. I mean, you look at it, Japanese consumers are all about the franchise and making sure they do it right. I mean, obviously they like Sony and Nintendo because they're home, you know, home base kind of thing. But
home team.
Yeah, they're Japanese the home team, but... boys. Really, it comes down to how good the franchise is. And, I mean, Nintendo had a terrible console, so nobody bought it. But as soon as they had the good franchises come back into play, they said, oh, okay, so this isn't actually as bad as we thought it was. And obviously you have the new updates going on with 3DS, the store. You've got the the augmented reality stuff that is more or less for fun. It's really big over there, but, I mean, States, nobody even knows what it is.
Yeah, they
so
limited use. And to bring this back around, for the past 5 or 6 weeks now, the 3DS has outsold every other system in Japan combined.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive.
Nintendo just announced today that the 3DS is now the fastest selling console of all time in Japan.
Yeah.
And welcome back, Dell.
Fastest to reach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oops.
Jelly soft intro.
Yeah. Literally.
So Sony Vita, what are we all?
I kind of want to ask you one last thing about it ties into the Vita, but it's also kind of includes the 3DS thing, which is I wanted to know what you think of how they announced a Monster Hunter game for the Vita this year. Do you think that'll give the same shot in the arm to the Vita as everything else as the 3DS is in Japan?
That's gonna do for the Vita what, as I said, Ace Combat and also Tails did for Microsoft the 360, like in 2007 and 2008. It's gonna be a nice boost, but it ain't gonna do nothing. I mean, unless Sony. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're already seeing that they don't care. I mean,
is a year late again.
Oh, they're not even a year late. They're several years late. I mean, the Vita's a cool thing in concept, mm-hmm. but if it came out like 2 or 3 years ago. If they had done the Vita when the PSP came out, you know, at least have made a second joystick plus a, you know, a little bit better on the graphical capability, they would have easily they would have probably been way better off. I mean, I'm not saying that they would have beat the DS. I don't think that's possible, but they would have been up.
This should have the Vita should have been what they did instead of the PSP Go.
I forgot about that.
When people thought that, yeah, right. I can't forget. there was a time there when people thought the PSP Go was going to be the PSP 2 when
right.
people didn't know what the Go was.
Yeah,
and if this had been, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say like the they ended up turning the Go into a prep machine for the Vita, and then they didn't sell it at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was a wasted opportunity.
I mean, it kind of worked for some people, at least myself, because that's exactly what I did with the PSP Go. I sold all my UMDs, bought everything digital, and now I can play it all on my PS Vita. But now I'm hearing that the way that you download things to the PS Vita is really weird. So you can download games to the you can download all of your PSP game digital PSP games to the Vita, but you can't download them directly from the Vita. You can only directly download 250 games right now, or some number like that. But you can download them to the PS3, then to the Vita, and it's just the fact that this is even an issue kind of almost negates what the PSP Go did to prep as few people as it did already. And it's just so weird. The PSP Go should have never happened. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
In no way should it have happened. No, there's no reason. I mean, Sony blundered hard. I mean, a lot of Japanese companies are blundering hard right now. So,
okay. Speaking of Final Fantasy 13 too. Let's
okay. In some happier news, I guess some people care. Journey is coming out March 13th.
Yeah, that's happy news. I like that game company.
I really don't.
Really?
I don't. Flower was pretty, but kind of boring. Flow was pretty, but not even really a game.
I guess I should maybe say I like Flower. I never actually did play Flow.
Right.
So. Yeah. But I don't think it's boring necessarily. I mean, it's certainly not exactly the most exciting thing in the world, but I think beauty for beauty's sake is an okay thing.
It was a different great screensaver.
Yeah, it's
you gotta admit that art's pretty awesome. I mean, yes. No getting around that.
But for $50,
that's expensive art.
Yeah,
which doesn't really make sense.
$15? Was it $15?
$15.
I thought it was $10. Huh.
Well,
I guess I can't.
It was right in that period where games were transitioning from $10 to $15, so. Who knows?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. $10 or $15, it was a nice looking experience. And sure. Journey looks nice as well.
Yes.
It looks like that game company asked that game company game.
Exactly.
Well, they've also announced that they are working on another game that's going to take online to a whole new level, is what they're saying. That
so. I totally
a whole new level.
A whole new digital level.
Yeah, so I guess that game in 2015.
Expect me to review it because I'm the only one who will buy it. So let's get back to some bad news then.
Quick news. Listen, bad news, either. Vita and PS3 cross-platform play.
Yo, everybody, this is news from the block, everybody. So listen up.
Straight up. Straight up.
Just, we're talking to Jenny here.
Uh-huh.
And Jenny is
Jenny from the block. I forget what that's from.
That is Jennifer Lopez hit song.
Oh, okay.
So
that I feel okay that I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, you were like 4 when that song came out.
Probably was.
So if you buy a game for the Vita, then you can play it on PS3.
And DLC and stuff.
Yay!
Like
that. And
vice versa. It's a good step in the right direction.
I just don't see the point because, like, if you're playing, like, if you want to play with somebody on the PS3 and you have a Vita, you're missing, like, 4 total buttons between L3 or 3, L2, R2.
I'm more interested in the PS3 stuff coming over to the Vita.
Yeah, I agree. The idea of going on vacation, you know, like let's say you're playing the next Uncharted game on your PS3, Uncharted 4, and then you go on vacation and you can continue playing that on the Vita as you're out there, which would be awesome.
That's kind of their hope, but that's not exactly what how things are going for right now. It's just more of incentives.
Sure.
DLC, there's maybe one game that you can directly play between the two of them right now? Hustle Kings?
I know
Hustle Kings?
HD.
Yeah.
Hustle Kings?
Huxtable
Kings.
That's the name of a Japanese knife maker, so that's weird.
Okay. But I guess everybody but me is playing me.
It's a good first step, but I just don't care yet.
I mean, it's a nice gesture. They don't have to do this if they don't. I mean, like if they'd never ever mentioned.
They kind of do have to do it. In an age where everything on my iPhone can go to my iPad to my Macintosh.
Can you play like Infinity Blade on your Mac? Is that like, can you literally do that?
It's coming, yeah. Like,
oh, really? Okay.
Mountain Lion. Well,
yeah, Mountain Lion is going to be that next step in that direction.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's an age where that is almost a priority. Everyone likes to be part of a singular ecosystem.
And with, you know, with the cloud saving and cloud storage
stuff. It only makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's good that they...
I mean, it's another... That's another excuse to have PlayStation Plus for the cloud saving and whatnot for a bit, you know, more.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey guys,
yeah,
what do you think? Because here's what I'm thinking: Vita's cool and whatnot, but Steam PS3, right, coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So Steam PC, cross platform play. Steam on Vita.
I mean,
there's a sales
pitch. I mean,
that's a pretty damn good sales pitch.
Yeah, but what'd you do with it?
What would you do with it? Team Fortress 2 and buy hats.
I wouldn't want to play Team Fortress 2 with somebody on a PS3, let alone a Vita. I would join one of those rooms that would exclude anyone from joining if they're on PS3 or Vita.
That doesn't seem to be the Valve way with Counter-Strike coming out, that Counter-Strike is just everybody plays with everybody, no delineation between PS3.
Well, they have a matchmaking system for that, where the best people will always move up. Team Fortress 2 doesn't have matchmaking. It's a server-based game.
Yep.
So,
You guys know how big those fan communities are,
Oh, they're
right?
huge.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
You can take the diehards, and that's going to always be a minority, and they're like, oh, PS3 players? Get out of my room. then you're going to have just the normal players who don't care.
I would wager that if you're playing Team Fortress 2 now, the only people doing it are diehard players.
No.
Team Fortress 2 is crazy popular.
I could pop in my orange box right now on Xbox, and there'll be like several thousand people playing.
I play Team Fortress 2 on at least a weekly basis, and I'm one of the lower ranked people on any server I join.
Ben, you have to understand, Ben, that that Eric is a consolist. It's if there was like racism on consoles, that Eric would be that. He just hates everything.
Oh, he hates consoles.
He just hates consoles. He only thinks that the old Amiga is the console everybody should be playing. So,
well, Amiga's.
I bet he likes Virtual Boy, doesn't he?
Oh yeah,
dude, Virtual Boy is amazing.
That's what Eric, I thought.
You could sell that on eBay.
Eric, do you think that the 3DS should go back to where it came from? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Go back to where it came from.
Once again, pulled into accidentally saying something racist.
Yeah.
Okay. Next bit of news. This is a rumor, so take it with a grain of salt.
And it's a pretty outlandish sounding rumor.
Yeah,
no, it's outlandish, but it's totally believable to me.
Totally, yeah.
Japanese Vita developers jumping ship.
I totally don't think it's outlandish.
Yeah, this is jumping ship from
the Vita.
Vita.
From Vita to I'm trying to set you up, Eric.
To anything else?
Yeah, anything else?
to nothing, because they'd rather do nothing than make games for the Vita.
No, specifically the article in question says jumping ship to the 3DS, or the quote in question, which is what makes me think that this sounds – it almost sounds like Zomji Vita, 3DS better than Vita. Everybody loves these games better than yours.
Did you need the Asian accent?
That wasn't supposed to be Asian. That was supposed to be like a Reddit forum user.
Goddamn racist.
That was my Reddit, my impression of a Reddit user.
Oh, God. Now they're going to attack you guys.
Yeah.
I'm out. No, but
I have to wash my hands of
this. IndustryGamers.com.
You look at what's going on. I don't know what it is. If you look at how this Vita thing's going on, just look at who it originally came from. The original report posted, Gamma got it first.
Yeah.
And they quoted the head of the Japanese IDGA. Now, anyone who doesn't know what the IDGA is, independent game people. But I thought that was funny.
That was good.
Thank you. So Kiyoshi Shin, he gets on there and he's like, so we're hearing some rumors that people under our organization don't really like running the Vita. In fact, they'd rather be devving on the 3DS or iOS kind of stuff. Reason being, Vita, because the sales have just tanked so bad, it's like it's not worth it monetarily. I mean, they would lose their jobs if they put that game out, because post-launch support will be completely dead. There is the assumption that the Vita is just in no way going to be doing anything in the Japanese market. And since Japanese games don't do as well in the United States, it doesn't really behoove them to stay on. I mean, yeah, the Vita is probably going to do a little bit at least
it will start
hopefully twice as good in the U.S.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to do better because it's really, in my opinion, marketed for the North American market and Europe.
Yep.
But, I mean, Japanese, if you look at especially recent US stuff that's come out, I mean, we just had a report earlier. It was the software industry where they're having a terrible year. They're like an 8% retail drop. 48% of Japanese companies did not make a profit last year. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, and
you're talking about.
Remember what happened last year too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, obviously,
the earthquake and the tsunami. Big deal.
Well, that didn't really that didn't hurt as much of the development scene as a lot of people think it did. You're talking about overall. Yeah, that's true. But you were pretty much heralding the end of the Japanese market, in my opinion, for development studios. It's not going to be something that we see overnight. But this is exactly what you know. What's his name? The former Capcom dev.
Right. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, Inafune. Inafune was talking. He was heralding this like 2 years ago.
2008, I remember him talking about it.
Yeah, he's talking about it, and he's right. And he's not the only one. Kojima, Kojima,
Look, look at the people who have come to America.
A lot of them.
Yeah, and the reason that so many Japanese developers aren't making money, like they didn't make money last year, how many Japanese major games were there last year?
Like 3.
Exactly. And how many games were being worked on, though? Like 100. There's too many Japanese-developed games that take 5 years in development. You can't make money if you're not releasing products.
And that is a huge issue. That is a huge issue, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, in the next 3 to 4 years, I think they're going to see like a collapse, at least in the Japanese market only, of what happened in the entire industry in like the 80s. You know what I'm saying? I think that's going to happen in Japan.
A lot of them are just completely outsourcing a lot of their stuff now to the States and to Canada and whatnot. Like Square Enix brought on Eidos, and I think Konami is having like their main Silent Hill games made by the American teams now and stuff like that. I definitely think you're going to see a lot more of that happening.
Maybe as a buffer to end the collapse, but unless they really change what they're doing, I think a collapse is going to happen.
Meanwhile, we say this, there's a lot of developers that release Nintendo games that are doing quite well. And even though
Nintendo?
You mean Nintendo? Like
Nintendo.
Specific, like first party?
Yeah, first party and some third party exclusives.
Well, Nintendo still is going to report a loss probably for the first year.
I think
next year they'll probably be fine, but they still are probably going to take a loss this year. I think guidance is still saying it will. So
I think they've just announced that they're taking a huge loss actually. But
And Sony. Oh God, you see Sony?
Sony's loss is four times as much as Nintendo's.
Yeah. Well, that's for the entire Sony business. But, yeah. I mean, it's a good
The PlayStation brand is the only thing profitable at Sony.
Sony can't exist on only PlayStation unless they downsize.
I'm just saying that that's the only thing. I'm not saying that they will.
Well, we'll see what Hirai does in his new position.
Yeah,
I would not be surprised to see Sony even go to a downshift within the next few years of like the like what we saw with Sega, where Sega was a console manufacturer for so many years and then they downsized and now they develop games. I would not be surprised if we saw Sony downsize from a lot of their manufacturing stuff to just PlayStation brand.
I think a new console's coming out. I think we all know a new console's going to be coming out. Maybe not this year.
He's saying that they're downsized to the PlayStation division.
Like the hardware stuff will. I mean, maybe the TV stuff will stay there, but like I'm imagining a lot of their other stuff getting dropped in favor of
TVs.
Just the PlayStation.
TVs is their worst business, mostly because of their price
distance on 3D.
Right. Yeah. The prices and 3D. Yeah. That was a bad horse to back, I think. But
hopefully.
But within the next decade or so, I would not be surprised if within the next decade we saw Sony like just downsize to just the Sony brand or just to the PlayStation brand.
I don't know about that. I mean, PlayStation is still considered minor for their business ish, but whatever. We'll see. Give it another. I think
there
we'll
won't
see
be
how
three
the
consoles
launch goes.
In 2020.
Oh, no.
I don't see how there can be three consoles anymore. With the minor differences and what's happening next, it's all
right. You think everything's just going to move to cloud gaming or something?
Oh, Gaikai? I don't think. Well, the problem with cloud gaming is still there's always going to be a small little bit of lag, and it is noticeable. It still is, and it's annoying.
And if you want to have a high success console, you have to be penetrative in America. And what is it? Something of 40% of America still doesn't have broadband. So that's not really
America is way behind on the internet front.
Our infrastructure is pathetic. We're too big.
Like as a guy who has a Korean roommate, I can tell you just how fucking far behind we are.
Their up speeds are better than my down.
Yeah, exactly. That was racist. And you're right. It's partially just because of the geography that you have to cover for the entire for a single nation, you know. Yeah. And
try running a 10-foot thick cable through the Rocky Mountains.
Sure. I mean, who knows where we will be in 8 years, you know, in 2020, but I would hope that we are better off by then. You know, maybe satellite internet will become a viable thing, or you know, whatever the solution is. It is, but you know.
Okay, but yeah. But so that's that. Ben.
Yeah. So
Ben had some news on Schaefer.
Tim.
I wanted to talk about where we think. excuse me. What's that one thing? Kickstarter. How that's going to affect the industry?
That's a great. You know what? I think it's the kind of thing that's going to be awesome. So again, for those who, for some reason, have been living under a rock, Double Fine Studios has run this Kickstarter. Fundraiser to get a campaign to get an adventure game put together. Double Fine Adventure, which is still, you know, tentative name.
Working title.
They've created over, or they've gathered over $2 million. Basically, it turned out to be, it amounts to $2 million with the pre-orders. With 3 weeks to go. You actually look at the whole scale of the thing, it's really not that much.
It'll probably end up being about half of what the numbers actually say on the website. That's about what they'll get, is about half of that. It's the general rule of thumb for Kickstarter, supposedly. They're at $2,228,000 right now.
And the other the interesting thing is that they've gone ahead and they didn't go to any major publisher for this. They went and just did it themselves. And so just doing a stroll through Kickstarter, and I've been kind of keeping track for a feature that we have coming up on Kickstarter and gaming funding and stuff. There are a lot of independent game developers that are funding projects through Kickstarter, whether it's full-on, like, these big, giant, beautiful games, or it's – it's kind of small indie titles, and they're all looking for different amounts. So Ben brings up a good point. How do you guys see Kickstarter and things like this, where people are almost kind of paying in advance to get these games, help kind of get these games created? You know, how do you guys kind of see that taking on the industry?
I don't think we're going to see any immediate changes. But I think this sets a pretty decent precedent, at least. Again, it's like the cloud gaming thing. It's like, who knows where this will be in 8 years, but, Double Fine is definitely a very specific, scenario. Like they are, the number of things that come together for Double Fine in this, the fact that they're so well liked, the fact that Tim Schafer is such a face behind it, the fact that their games haven't sold so well in the past.
It's a perfect storm. It's a perfect storm.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect storm of like of a underdog story for them, and it's you know, you're not going to see that happening with people who don't know what it is. Partially just because for unknowns, that is. Partially because just a lot of unknowns won't have the forum to speak out and say, hey, come fund our game like Double Fine does, because everybody likes Double Fine so much. Everybody follows the news about Double Fine. But if somebody's completely unknown, I mean, I think that's the biggest problem, is just letting people know that you're making a thing that they can put money towards. I mean, if you tell enough people, you will get enough money probably. But just, you know, just out of people who idly click it or whatever, there's enough people who are impulsy enough to do that. But you need to have a forum to be able to, you know, like, spread the word about your fundraiser above anything else.
And it's as a place to get money, you're not going to make any big budget games with funding from Kickstarter.
Right. I don't think so, because
they raised $2 million. You know, you and me, we think that's a lot of money. Sure. Guess what? That's like a tenth of a low budget video game.
I mean, $2 million. $2 million is supposedly about what stacking and Trench and all those games cost.
Yeah, 4 hour XBLA games. You know.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, the next Call of Duty is not going to be funded through Kickstarter. Although, who knows? Maybe it could be. Maybe that's a big enough name, but just to have enough people knowing about it. But I think that's the thing, is that, like, if you're big enough where anybody would know to give you money, like, you probably don't need the money.
Well, here's an interesting thing, and I think this is where it can really come in handy to do things on Kickstarter, is to Let's say you have the Infinity War. Sorry, it's something is spreading, and I think it's managing its way through Skype somehow. Let's say you have a couple of guys on Infinity War, and they're in between Modern Warfare 3 and Modern Warfare 4, right? So they're kind of twiddling their thumbs, waiting for assignment, and they decide, you know what? Let's put together this simple little game for Infinity War. We have an idea. We want to do an FPS. We have a lot of these assets left over that we never use in Call of Duty. Let's throw it up on Kickstarter and say, hey, who wants to see, Call of Space Duty? You know, and maybe who wants to see a few of our developers kind of create this little side project that may end up being sold through, a big publisher, but I think that's where you could start to see some good advantages, because you'll get a lot of these a lot of the people that are essentially waiting on projects or in between projects or just proving out game mechanics that could be used in future projects. You can see them kind of create these games. I mean, could you have imagined what like a crowdsourced or crowdfunded Portal game would have been like? Let's say they wanted to prove out Narbacular Drop or whatever it was called before, before they actually built the full game out of it. So they just said, hey, you know what? Let's crowdsource this or crowdfund this, and we'll create a game out of it, and if the mechanic works really well, we'll include it in the next Portal game or whatever. I think that kind of stuff could actually be pretty cool, almost like a proving ground type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting. Just see stuff like that.
You guys are killing me right now.
Awesome. Ben, do you have something to say?
Oh, yeah. Guys, I don't think I'll make it through the night here. Kickstarter stuff, you know, this, I think it's so successful more or less because, one, community wanted it to – God dang it. Yeah. I can't, like, talk. There's, like, you know that one little, like, something in your throat hurts? It's that one little spot. Let me get some water real quick.
Man, that's going to infect our entire listening audience with this disease.
If you ever wanted to get sick, it probably started from me and made its way over to Ben, so.
Yeah, you killed it. I can't believe it.
My stomach flu.
Our up speeds are good enough to let the avian flew through, but nice. Not good enough to allow cloud saving.
So blah. So. I'm trying.
You disappeared.
Yeah, I have that ability.
We thought you pulled a Steven.
Oh.
I think it was so successful because, one, we all wanted it to happen. It's Double Fine. It's Tim Schafer. Their games are good.
It's a point and click adventure game.
Yeah, it's like, darn tootin', let's get it done. And we were like, let's go. If anyone else tries to do it, it ain't going to happen.
Or it might happen, but the chances of...
It better be like Bungie or one other, like Insomniac.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
If somebody else did it, it would be, they'd be going for $20,000 to $30,000 on Kickstarter, and they might scrape by.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these actually, they fund quite well.
Justin, Justin Russo, a guy we've had on featured on SideQuest before, managed to get his stuff done through Kickstarter.
And
Kickstarter
that was when it was brand new in 2009.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And Kickstarter has proved that it works. Like, the service itself is viable.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's just who you're funding that makes the difference as to whether or not it becomes a thing.
You know what I think it is? You know the original idea, like the thought for anyone posting on Kickstarter was, you know, originally?
What?
It was you didn't have a good enough game for a publisher to pick you up or for you to get private equity or funding, not equity. I don't know what I'm using, but to get any kind of funding. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Double Fine has shattered that idea, but hasn't done it to where you can expect every Tom, Dick, and Harry to get that kind of funding for what should be a great game. You know what I mean?
Sure. So, yeah.
Blah. I just was trying to get your thoughts on that one because this is a really interesting discussion because they put a lot of time and effort into coming up with their pitch. I mean, that pitch is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Oh, my God, it was hilarious.
You guys watched the video, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I actually have not watched it yet.
Oh,
I've read the whole thing. Yeah,
both good.
I saw the second video. But, yeah.
This is why you can follow people like Tim Schafer. You might not care so much about his games. And that's for a lot of, you know, most of the core audience. I guarantee you they've never even heard of Double Fine. But the people that do, I mean, Tim Schafer is an awesome guy. And, I mean, it's really what they did for Kickstarter here is ridiculous.
It's more to do with the personality behind an idea than the idea itself.
Yeah, probably.
Look at Idle Thumbs. They got their goal in like an hour and a half today.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Yep.
They're funding for a new podcast, and they're up to $65,000 in 8 hours.
$65,000.
Yep.
For a podcast?
Yeah. They're going for $30,000.
Okay, hold on a second. So we really need to get on this tip.
Yeah.
Where is this nonsense? How do you?
How do you start a Kickstarter?
We need to get some new microphones, cameras,
a better internet connection speed for me,
a better internet connection speed for me, healthcare for Ben.
Yeah, you guys have murdered me.
Yeah, we'll buy Ben a bus ticket to Canada so he can go get some.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see going forward what kind of studios and developers take to Kickstarter and things like the Indie Fund and so forth.
You guys heard about Indie Fund, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was good job on everyone there. Got their money back in 48 hours or something.
Yeah,
nonsense.
Yeah.
The way you phrased that, though, kind of sounded like, you guys heard about Indie Fund, right? Got cut from neck to nuts by something crazy.
Some crazy. Wow.
Motherfucker.
That's the first time we've used neck to nuts on the podcast. Yeah. Any other news?
Ben wanted to talk about the Mass Effect 3 trailer, but...
I do, too. How many boners did it give you? So many boners.
So many boners.
So many boners.
Now, did you guys go to E3?
Yeah, I saw the demo at E3.
It was pretty much the same thing, but it was – you could tell the polish. I mean, they expanded on this one, but that was
About the one with the sunflowers?
Yes.
And yeah, okay.
No, well, I mean, not – oh, yeah, I'm talking about that one. Yeah. But, you know, there's the – you saw the demo on Xbox Live. I mean,
yep.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that this game. They showed it. E3.
Okay. Here's what's amazing about this the trailer that debuted yesterday. For those again who don't know, it debuted during the Walking Dead episode last night. It very much reminded me of the what was that zombie game that was put out over the summer that had just a badass trailer, but the game was
Dead Island.
So it kind of reminded me of that. In the effect that they were going for, that almost this really emotional. In the trailer, starts off with this girl, you know, kind of running through almost like a sea of sunflowers, and all of a sudden aliens
they
come down.
Fields.
There you go, fields of sunflowers. And an alien comes down, and the next scene is. Essentially, or an alien ship, one of the collector ships. The next scene is essentially the sunflower field has been leveled, you know, our hero Shepard is
Shepard.
Shepard. Shepard. Our hero Shepard is kind of leading the resistance. So it was actually really well done. It was emotional, it was captivating. The whole cinematic feel of the trailer was fantastic, and it sold me. Just on the trailer alone, I was sold on Mass Effect 3, the way a lot of us were sold on Dead Island.
I hope that this game
here's the difference.
Is good.
Yeah.
Well, you guys know what happened, obviously, with Mass Effect 3. The whole thing got leaked, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I read all of it because I'm a huge fan of this. I mean, stupid huge fan of this. And I'm reading it, and I'm like, all right, cool. This sucks. But now I'm reading, like I'm watching this, I'm seeing that trailer, and, you know, you talk to the doctors, you hear what Casey Hudson has to say, you know the team's doing it differently. And I think this game is, you know, Mass Effect 2 was pretty much game of the year 2010, up there with Red Dead Redemption. Those two were duking it out, in my opinion. 2012, I think Mass Effect 3, I mean, just from what we've seen and what we know so far, this game is going to be exceptional. And, I mean, BioWare, they really need to come out of that rut from where they've been. And I think the reason they've been in that rut is because all their good stuff has been focused on Mass Effect 3. So,
but this is also not the same writers as Mass Effect 2.
It's a good amount of them.
It's not Drew Kaparshian, though, right?
Like, yeah,
it's not
exactly. Which, unfortunately, you know.
But the thing he said when he left was literally that he always felt he got an unfair or like an undue amount of credit for it, and that the games are so huge that like in no way is he representative of the whole final product because there's so many different people writing on it at any given time that there's so much there that he couldn't possibly have written it all by himself anyway. So, you know, I mean, that's a big part of it to me, too, is that, you know, in a video game, more so than any other piece of fiction, like, it's so much more of a group effort because, you know, you got one person writing this person's quest, you got this person writing this, you know, this character, you know, you got, you know, all these different things as opposed to, you know, like a movie or something where it's very – where you might still have people – getting in each other's way and whatnot, but it very much comes down to like a smaller group. But, I'm not too worried about.
It's gonna be amazing.
Yeah, I'm buying. Oh, yeah. I'm buying it a lot. I'm buying it so much.
I'm gonna buy it, but I just this needs to be good.
You're gonna hate it. You're just gonna.
I'm just gonna launch myself into the BioWare Studios. Hit Dr. Musiak. No one can pronounce his last name. Don't lie to me. Hit him in the face. Don't give me the game. Am I showing a little bit of bias? I don't know.
Eric's going to launch himself from one of those weather balloons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're going to need like 6 weather balloons to carry me up in the air.
Yeah.
Can I say something, though, that I've kind of refrained from saying?
Yeah.
I didn't think that this trailer was that special.
Really? Oh, I love it.
It didn't do it for me.
Needed to focus more on Shepard.
Yeah, Shepard.
Kick your butt.
Yeah, that was kind of it.
Shepard.
That and just
Shepard.
Shepard.
the parts they focused on to me are kind of the most generic parts of Mass Effect, like the what are they even called? The husks.
The husks.
And you like that? Like they've never really interested me very much. The Shepard's really not in it that much. It's all on Earth. Where
and then
it's
you've
like,
got Ashley Williams who. I've admired the crap out of her. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's another weird thing is Ashley is motherfucking dead in my campaign.
Yeah,
so.
She's dead in all mine. Is that bad?
No. She was
you didn't kill her. You vermired her. That's what you did.
But yeah, it's just the parts of that they were showing me of Mass Effect, like even ignoring the whole thing about like that so much of Mass Effect is characterization and the space opera drama. Even ignoring that, it's just the locale of Earth and the husks where, you know, those aren't even in the action front, those aren't the things that seem the most interesting to me about Mass Effect. Like, it's the space. If you go on the action front, it's the space battles and the interaction with the different species and stuff like that. Like the husks are just zombies at this point.
Well,
like,
have been. Most of your enemies this game are going to be indoctrinated humans, Cerberus. Remember?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So, it makes it a little weird. It's like, take back the Earth. Let's kill other humans.
Yeah.
So
the whole like the zombification of Mass Effect is just kind of but and that I think I felt that was a little bit more on display in this one in this trailer, and I don't know, maybe it was just that mixed with the fact that it's all pre-rendered and stuff like that, and I've become so
gorgeous pre-rendering.
It's great pre-rendered, but footage, but I have kind of pushed against that so much these days. I don't know, I can't really pre-rendered. Unless it's done by Blur, kind of fails to really get my heckles up, I guess, these days. I think that the trailer for Mass Effect 2, where they played that Two Steps from Hell or Three Steps from Hell, whatever the name of that band is called, over the the real footage and showed the different characters interacting, I thought that was the best trailer that BioWare has ever put out. And
link me to that trailer. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, I'll find it here for you. But
email or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And that for me kind of encapsulates all of what's great about Mass Effect, and it, from the action to the drama and whatnot. And this just didn't do it for me. I don't know. And playing it during Walking Dead is a little bit weird to me too, because I think somebody on Destructoid talked about getting the impressions of a Walking Dead fan about the trailer, because The Walking Dead is such a show about it's such a show about slow drama and whatnot, that I feel like it was kind of maybe pandering, thinking that, oh well, this is a nerdy thing, so maybe nerds will like this.
Look how
game.
Many every single person I know that plays video games watches that show. So if you want to find a market, it is pretty accurate.
Sure, but I don't think you're going to get people, a ton of people who don't already know what Mass Effect 3 is, finding out about it through The Walking Dead. That's kind of my point too, is that the people who are watching Walking Dead who already like stuff like Mass Effect are already going to get Mass Effect. The people who are watching The Walking Dead for the stuff that isn't within that kind of wheelhouse are probably not going to care about Mass Effect 3, especially since it's the third goddamn game at this point.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back for our third and final segment on the Vita.
Okay.
Yay.
Okay.
Did any of you hit that link I sent you?
We'll be back.
We've cleared out our throats and put aside our extremely loud scroll mice to kind of put the big camper on the show and talk about the Vita. We are, by the time you're hearing this, it's going to be Vita Eve in the U.S., kind of, since a few people bought it last week. Some people have had it for review. But it's, it's sort of, but it launches here in the U.S. on Wednesday. Last Wednesday? No, the actual...
It half-launched.
Yeah, it half-launched.
It half-launched.
It was a soft launch.
Yes. There's a lot of softness in this episode tonight. Anyway, so the Vita launches this week full-time.
Breaking news, Vita can't get it hard.
Oh, God almighty. the nubs are soft.
although Eric is pretty hard for that screen.
God, yes.
So we want to talk a little bit about the Vita, what it means to have Sony's next gen device, their next portable, what that means to the kind of the handheld handheld economy in the first place. Is it going to last? What are the hurdles it's going to face? So let's kind of take this almost like a roundtable approach and just start chiming in where we think this is going to go with the Vita. The biggest thing, I think it definitely has some hurdles. The largest one I firmly believe is the price.
Mm-hmm.
That $200. We saw what it did to the 3DS, and obviously the 3DS maybe technically wasn't as advanced as the Vita, but we definitely saw that $250 is quite a bit of money. And the same thing happened to the PSP Go. I think launched at $250 as well.
Yeah.
GameStop. Yep. I mean, what do you guys feel about this price? Is this price going to drop anytime soon?
No.
Are these buy two, get one free things a kind of an initial stopgap?
I don't know if that's a mandate by Sony, but every single retailer is doing a buy two games, get one free. So I don't know if they're very hopeful. But the price isn't going to drop on the system. We talked about this on Twitter and on podcast a while ago. You know, between basic parts and manufacturing and promotion and everything, they don't have any room to drop it as of yet. So
I think that's the key point, is as of yet. It's really going to depend on what happens these first few months of the device and what we see at E3 from the Vita. I mean, it is kind of – it's launching this year at the same time that – or right around the same time the 3DS launched last year.
And yeah, a couple weeks earlier.
Yeah. And we saw the 3DS drop in price. I think it was beginning of August or mid-August.
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
like August 13th, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if there's going to be any price cut, I don't think it would even come close to happening until the fall sometime. And it really all depends. I think a lot of it, what the pricing scheme depends with the system is the quality of games that are coming out, and what Nintendo has as well coming out in the U.S.
The price. My brother got off the bat. He got Vita. It was a 3G, so you know that kind of adds a little bit of price. But then you know Uncharted and an 8 GB memory stick. So like that was his basic thing. Like it, pretend it's the Wi-Fi model. You know, it's $250 plus a $50 game. You know, plus a $35.
If you get Uncharted, because Uncharted is the only $50.
It's at launch, but I think that's going to become the regular. And then a $35 memory card. So right off the bat, he's spending $330 on a game. And I don't know if many people are going to be able to swing that. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. I was actually talking to, I think it was Andrew Grain earlier this week, or maybe it was even about 2 weeks ago. It was either Andrew Grain or Ben Kuchera, I can't remember. Somebody on Twitter. And we discussed that maybe the reason that these memory cards are so expensive is because Sony can't afford to drop the price of the Vita right now. But
it's a way to make easy money.
What I was going to say was that at some point down the line, we are going to maybe – that what we'll maybe see is maybe these memory cards are artificially at a higher price at launch, because they've talked about that before with the PSP Go, about getting these early adopters right off the bat to pay the premium, and then maybe drop those memory cards down later on so that they could have like a sort of soft price drop that, you know, if they can't afford to do it with the actual hardware, they can afford to do it with the unnecessary part of the hardware that is considered to be very pricey, and then be able to put some of their marketing behind that a little bit to try and draw in a few more customers later down the line, maybe when they have a bigger game coming out, like the Call of Duty game that's supposed to be coming out, or the Monster Hunter game that's supposed to be coming out, or one of, you know, something like that.
And I think, you know, it's you know, it's probably right on. And clearly they were price gouging, because this was a way they could make easy money. You know, a 4 GB micro SD card will cost you $8, and they're selling them for $25?
Maybe more than that. I'm
I think it's
totally
20
sure.
or 25. Either way, it's a huge markup, and I just hope that markup doesn't end up killing them off the bat, because people don't want to pay that premium for a memory card.
And it certainly doesn't help that the hard drive memory kind of market right now is sort of in a weird state of
thanks Thailand.
Yeah, way to get flooded or whatever happened.
No, that wasn't. It's like, okay, yo dog, it's 2012. There should totally be some internal memory, some internal storage in that machine.
I mean, the PSP Go had internal memory. It had 16 GB. Yeah, 16 GB memory built in. For the same price as the Vita.
Well, honestly,
the Vita is doing a lot of other stuff.
But if you look at how the Vita's going, I mean, it seems a little off compared to how they initially went with the PS3. Remember, the PS3 was so open source?
Sure.
And then you now have the Vita. I mean, obviously, trusting your customers not to take advantage of you didn't really pan out for the PS3 and PSN, but...
Well, PSP, I mean, especially.
Oh, yeah.
The piracy was rampant on the PSP.
But the Vita, I mean, the least you can do is let people use their own memory cards. It's not that hard. Obviously, they've got a lot of money to make up for. I mean, I just look at the Vita and I just don't I don't see it. I mean, I like the console. I like playing Uncharted. I really want to see a new SOCOM on there.
I don't like Uncharted so far.
That's unfortunate. Well, I've only played like 2 or 3 levels. I haven't really done much with it yet, but it's cool. But you already look at the developers going under that have developed for the console. It's not a good sign. The guys who did Little Deviants, they're gone. That was a Sony. Wow. That was a first party group. They're done. And I mean, like, they didn't even get the game out, and they're already gone. I mean, Sony really.
Well, they sent that game out to die too, and
well,
you know,
do you kind of
deserved it.
Do you think that there's a point that developing for a handheld console becomes too much? Like, you start spending too much money developing for these
absolutely.
Handhelds? I mean, look at
handhelds should not be your primary business.
Well, exactly. I mean, look at how much money is made off of iOS games for relatively nothing. Yeah. I mean, you can put out a fun portable experience, and I know it's not quite just to compare portable or I guess mobile phone games to handhelds, but
I think it is, though. It should be.
They're different. They're different experiences.
There are different experiences, but look at that transition.
Yeah,
I think that they are the markets are different enough between people who are buying a Vita and people who are buying an iPad, or at least the people who buy a PS Vita they might overlap with people who buy an iPad, but the market for an iPad goes beyond video games for one.
Yeah,
I think is a big part of it.
Oh, obviously. And
so you can't ever really expect the same size of an audience for a dedicated handheld as you can have for something like an iPad or like the iPhone, because there are people who maybe don't play video games almost at all, but buy Angry Birds on their iPhone just because it's Angry Birds or something like that. So you can see numbers like that jumping up really high, but they have to cater to. But when you have to cater to a much more segmented audience or a much smaller audience, like part of part of why the games are so expensive is because less people are going to be buying these games than
Look at it this way. Angry Birds cost, what was it, $50,000 to develop and put up their first ads for on iOS. That game costs $1, and they're selling it to 400 million people. Uncharted for the Vita probably cost $20 to $30 million from how they're saying it, and they're selling it to 3 million people at $50.
But at $50, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way to make up the price margins.
Just the business aspect of all of this is, why does the Vita – I mean, you're getting the same – you wait till iPad 3 comes out and probably iPhone 4 and even like the new Android devices. It doesn't make any sense why – I mean, any developer with any sense of, I would like my job, I want to keep it, is going to sit there and say, I can make a pretty darn decent game on a mobile device for pretty cheap without as much money, and I can return a heck of an I get a lot of money back because microtransactions don't cost a thing to most people who have iPads and iPhones or the nicer Android devices. The Vita, that's why I just don't see it. I mean, I'd love the fact that we're going to get some core games on there, but that's it. It's a handheld device. It has some stuff, but really, what are you going to do with most of that? I mean, you're gonna use the thing for a gaming device. I mean,
it's you're going to be on your couch.
Yeah, it's like whoop-de-doo. And then when you go out and you have your iPad or your nice phone with you, you'll play your little games on there, and you won't have the Vita on you. I mean, I see the Vita doing well for the first 2 weeks, and then I see nothing happening because everyone else who wants to play handheld games are 12 and they have 3DSs.
I think we mentioned this months ago on an earlier episode, but like Eric just said, like it's going to be on your couch. I think that if Sony seems to be marketing this as a more grown up kind of device,
yeah, they are.
3DS. How does this, you know, I think the part of the market that this appeals to that not enough people are recognizing.
No. God, sorry. Kill me here. I live for the scroll. Elder Scroll. No. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It keeps those demons inside of you away that are slowly killing you, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
And I think the market that would make a great use out of this device, and a market that I don't think anybody is either talking about or marketing to, is DALI. And by that I mean like a person that has a girlfriend or a wife or a kid or all of the above or whatever, or you know, pick and choose whatever you want. Who, you know, maybe their significant other wants to use their TV and their, sure, you know, to watch, you know, The Walking Dead or whatever. And while they're doing that or watching whatever it is they want or using it for whatever they want, you can sit next to them and hang out with them while still doing something you want to do at the same time. Not necessarily saying you don't want to watch Walking Dead, because I know you do. But, almost in the same way that, like, they're kind of marketing the Wii U by saying, like, well, say somebody else wants to use the TV, you can move over to your whatever you're doing on your Wii U to your little tablet. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think the Vita fits that niche, but I also don't think that anybody is exploiting that niche whatsoever.
Well, I think you're right on to that, Steven, and nobody's exploiting that because that cross-platform PS3, PS Vita isn't being advertised, if any. It's definitely not being advertised well. The Vita really should be an extension of the PS3 in order to capture some of that audience, capture my audience. The only reason I have a 3DS isn't for the Resident Evils, it isn't for the, you know, the canceled Mega Man Legends. It was for Mario Kart, Super Mario 3D Land. It was all for the first-party games. And where Nintendo does really well is they have that cachet of, you know, really popular first-party titles and the occasional Monster Hunter or whatever game pops in there. If I'm going to be playing a Sony first-party game here in the U.S., I'm going to want to play it on a big TV. I'm not going to want to look at a smaller screen. I think that's my issue. it's going to be a battle where Sony is right now, like you're saying, Steven, positioning this to be the core owner's device that they'll want to be able to play core games on, but they don't have access to the TV. But they're trying to position it that way, but it's not there quite yet.
They're taking too long because come E3 and they might start marketing it. Guess what? Nintendo's in full swing of the Wii U, and they're going to be trotting out these games that, oh, I'm playing this on the Wii U, and then when my wife comes in, I actually can play it in my hand.
I always play it in my hand. My wife comes in.
But you know what I'm saying? Like they're kind of late to the party.
And I have just in the amount of time that we've been talking about this, I just wrote their commercial to market to this. Is you just play off of that old Kevin Butler ad with the "Dear Sony, my girlfriend thinks we're watching a movie, but we're
just
not."
Don't
but
use
like
Kevin Butler, because that shit is old.
It's old, sure. But yeah, at this point, I still like Kevin Butler, but
Kevin Butler is awesome.
Yes,
my point being is like you do a kind of a play on that old commercial, like my girlfriend thinks that we're watching a movie, but we're playing a video game. Oh, girls are stupid, and what you do is you take that, but like have you know his girlfriend sitting on the couch watching TV or whatever, and then him sitting there playing Uncharted Golden Abyss right next to her, and then she sees that, and you know,
why is
awesome.
That shitty mini game in there?
Why are you holding up your Vita to the light, you crazy person? no, but you know, yeah, I'm just saying, like from a marketing perspective, you literally just show what those Vitas are, you know, what the Vita can do in that respect. Like you just show what we just talked about,
to the people. You're totally right, and I look at the hardware and I think this hardware is pretty badass. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful screen. The dual analog sticks are fantastic. The rear touch panel could potentially have some really awesome novel uses. The pinch to zoom stuff could be really cool. It's just that I think the
the games that are coming out for it right now, Uncharted, which it's great to have an Uncharted. I would want to play an Uncharted game in a I would want to play Super Mario Galaxy on my 3DS. It warrants a whole cinematic experience, and I think maybe Wipeout might be a better fit for a Vita.
Doesn't have a race box mode. God damn it. Doesn't have a race box mode. I just found that out this week. That makes me so mad.
Should be cheaper too, though.
Well, that's the other thing. Look, the pricing right now of the games has gone up, obviously. $39.99 and $49.99 are commonplace now for these new games. I mean, you're going to get a Vita game and a 3DS game at the same price.
Unless you buy online, because right now they are at a 10% discount, at least for now.
Well, yeah.
No, you know what? They're going to have to keep that. Why?
God, because, I hope they do.
Oh, no, you hope they don't?
I hope they do.
I hope they raise it to 20%.
Exactly.
I guess that's my biggest problem with that whole thing is 10% is nice, and they technically, where the space is at right now, they don't have to do that.
No, it's nice of them to do it, but it's not enough.
Exactly.
It's not enough for, and it's in their best interest to make it a bigger discount.
Yes, yeah.
It really should.
I mean, I love getting packages, and I love getting, discs, because I love just the whole overall, having a package sit on my shelf. So saving $4 or $5 and losing a package and having to store a game on a memory card, which, by the way, already costs, $30-$40 on top of it, isn't really a savings for me.
Yeah, and on top of that, plus, you don't know what their download speeds are going to
sure,
be like.
Sure,
that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, God, knowing Sony.
Exactly.
On top of all of that, those boxes for Vita games are cool.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome.
Oh, yeah, totally.
They're small.
S3 cases. It's awesome.
They're like the size of an NES cartridge. I love it.
It's like when Sony sold the mini discs for like a week and a half in 2002.
Yeah. Oh, man, I forgot about that. Sorry about that. I saw those in Target the other day, and man, I really like those. But I'm still going to get everything on digital because I would rather save the money. I guess.
Because you have to pay for the cards.
Memory card. But you need to have a memory card regardless because you have to be able to save your games. So whether or not you buy it,
but you don't need to have multiple.
Multiple what?
Memory cards. You're going to need multiple if you buy only digital.
No, because I can just...
I know you. You buy lots of games. Even if you have a 32-gigabyte card, you're only going to be able to hold at most 16 games.
Right, and I'll rotate them out. I'll delete games that I'm not playing at the time and then download them later. I do that all the time on my PS3 and on my PSP.
How do you do that?
I just do it. It's a thing that I do, and I'm done, and I do it.
How do you wait like 6 weeks for the downloads to finish?
For PSP, I download them on the PC and then move them over.
Yeah, but what about PS3?
For PS3, I don't play enough PSN games where it really becomes that much of an issue.
The technology for the Vita is amazing.
It is. It's a fantastic bit of tech. It's better than just about any like tablet out there.
Oh, yeah. It is better than any tablet out there.
Yeah, yeah.
As a device, it is. I mean, it's the same song with Sony. As a device, it is gorgeous. It is amazing. But the things that they're built, these walls that they're building around it, are such a pain in the ass that they're gonna shoot themselves in the foot with it.
It's more that they're just making things more difficult for the consumer than they need to be.
And by transitive process, they're making things worse for themselves. Because if things aren't good for the consumer, then people aren't going to pay money to use it. And so you lose money on it. And I don't understand. I don't know if that's just a Japanese thing at this point. Because Microsoft seems to be getting it right for the most part, and Apple seems to be getting it right for the most part. I mean, maybe probably more Apple than Microsoft, but
well, absolutely Apple.
They've
sold more of iPods or iPads or iPhones than Sony has sold of any device ever.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they've sold more iPods and they've sold more iOS devices than they've ever sold Macs.
Yeah, in the last quarter, they sold more iOS devices than Sony has sold in their history.
And I think Apple gets it a lot better than most other people. Even Apple has issues, but
well, Apple doesn't get it, but people who use Apple and the developers get it.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
So, there are definitely hurdles for the Vita, but there are also some real big advantages that Sony could potentially play off of as more software is released and as more updates are released. And that's really, I think one of those is the hardware and really putting the hardware to use in ways that are, unique and especially the rear touch pad, the multi-touch front facing, the cameras. This isn't going to be a device that you probably carry around in your pocket or in your backpack.
Well, your backpack, for sure.
It won't fit in your pocket. It's not going to replace your iPad, that's for sure. But it could potentially become the kind of device that you carry around your house, put it on its stand or whatever.
This is something I'm going to be using on my exercise bike.
Yeah, I definitely see it as being better than an iPad for certain things, and better than a 3DS for other things. And so it's just going to be really interesting to see how Sony starts to push the system. And I think we're not going to know until consumers start to buy it, people start to understand what it's all about, and then finally, hopefully break through to see see what happens. Because for a healthy Vita is healthy for the game industry. Otherwise, you're going to see the disappearance of handheld consoles if the Vita isn't a success.
Well, you're going to see disappearance of handheld, like, of proper handheld games. You're going to see more Angry Birds, less Infinity Blade, I guess.
I think we're moving towards that anyways.
I
don't think we're going to have anything after this. Yes, I think it's going to be social devices.
Yeah. But I don't want that.
It's a good part. Well, the good part is we will have better games on social devices.
Sure.
Like games that can easily do what the new Uncharted on the PS Vita is doing in terms of graphical capability and gameplay. I guarantee we'll have that at least in the next three to four years.
Eventually, there will be a better version of the Xperia Play.
Oh, yeah, eventually.
Will anybody want that?
Let's remind ourselves of the end gauge. Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I would rather have simple controls on a phone rather than touchscreen controls.
That's exactly what I was going to say. My issue isn't that I don't think we're going to lose, Uncharted's and whatnot altogether from the mobile gaming space. My issue is that I want to have thumbsticks and buttons and that sort of thing. And until Apple certainly doesn't seem to be taking up that niche, but I want that niche. I want that hardware that allows me to interface with my games in a good, comfortable way like that.
Yeah, like as it stands right now, I either have to, I use my Wiimote to connect to my Android devices.
Mm, that's right, you use it as almost a controller for your retro games, right?
Yep, that's why I do it. Like, I use emulators and stuff, and that's not a great solution, but it's better than trying to use touch controls.
Sure.
The iCade, the new iCade handheld, is a pretty good.
So that's what I'm thinking. You may see more of those kinds of things. An iCade handheld, because for all you may know, at home you'll want to play these big giant epic games, or when you're in a hotel room. But when you're on the on the bus or in between classes or something, you may not have enough time or want to play an Uncharted level game. You may just feel like an Angry Birds game.
Yeah.
So having maybe instead of having an actual device that has these built in, maybe it is attachments and so on that are designed.
And besides that, the one thing that needs to change in every mobile device, including phones and Vita and 3DS, battery technology needs to improve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
3 hours of gameplay on the Vita, mm-hmm. 2 3/4.
3 to 5.
3 to 5.
2 3/4 when I was playing Uncharted before I had to plug it in.
Mm.
And that's.
I mean, the 3DS is the same way.
It is. And I can get a little bit more by turning off 3D, which I usually do anyways, but.
Yeah. So, I guess final question to wrap this up. Who's getting a Vita?
I'm getting one day one. So
okay, Steve, Eric.
I went the entire PSP generation without getting one, so I've got a lot of games I can get.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still probably going to hold off until at least E3.
Okay.
To see if there's anything coming up and to see if there's somehow a price drop on something, because something's got to give. I already don't play as many games as I want, and spending another $280 on a minimum entry price for this device isn't really easy to do.
Sure. Especially with the economy. We especially with us knowing that within the next year and a half to 2 years, we're going to have a whole slew of new consoles.
Yeah,
up here.
And drive like 40 miles a day, and
that's it.
Or in the summer,
pussy.
And more in the summer, and gas is going to be hitting $4.
Oh yeah.
So,
Ben, what about you?
I am buying one. I'll take a free one, but I don't see the cost benefit to it. I mean, my 3DS. Let me be honest about the PSP. I own two. I own the first one for 8 hours. Got bored. Didn't like it. And I literally played the only game I wanted to play on the thing.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing.
That was Ace Combat. Turned it back in. 8 hours later, got my money back. You didn't hear that, whoever I returned it to. It was defective. Second one, I tried again. Both were PSP 1000 models, which you can do a lot of fun stuff to. And I don't really – I'm not a modder. I don't really do the mod scene kind of stuff. But, you know, those ones are much more robust. I don't really like the 3000s. They're really, really cheap feeling.
Oh, yeah, they are.
But the second one I own for –
they have an interlacing issue with the display. The
with the thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
They do.
Well, the second
one. You
can't
play them outside.
Yeah.
The second, not a problem. Second one I owned for like 10 hours. I think I had a little bit longer just because I got a really good deal on it, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll figure this thing out. I'll find a reason to own it. And I couldn't because I had my Game Boy Advance to play my Pokemon games. I had my at the time I had a BlackBerry, which was cool back in the day. I was like, okay, so there's that. I had my iTouch, which was fine. I didn't see any reason to own the PSP because the game offerings, SOCOM was cool, Killzone Liberation was great, the Ace Combat games were fun, but it was like awesome, one and done, and I finished them, and I turned that back in, and that's two consoles I owned for less than 24 hours.
Should have held off for Valkyrie Chronicles 2, man.
You know, I'm not really a Japanese. I mean, it's unless the game is really realistic, I don't really like to touch those kind of games, so that's just me. Yeah, probably.
Ben doesn't like to touch the Japanese.
Oh, that's going to be the headline of this podcast.
Great. Can't wait. Honestly, though, I mean, looking at the Vita, I love the hardware. I love the design. I love what they have for the thing. But one, I don't see a reason to buy it. And I mean, there's no way that Call of Duty is going to be the – you know, I need games. I need games that are going to do it for me. And none of them out there. No, not Lumens. Lumens, yeah. Great on the PSP. Got boring. I mean, the first one was great, and then it was like, who cared any after that? Nobody. So this one doesn't do it, in my opinion. The Vita, unless they get some strong software support, really start to play on the whole Vita and PSP relationship like the Wii U will do with its controller. Unless it can do stuff like that, I have no reason to buy one. I mean,
it's missing buttons.
Yeah, exactly. It's a $250 brick that I'll, you know, it'll sit in my corner. It'll look cool. And if I get the 3G version, which I probably won't, I mean, I own a really nice smartphone for a reason, so I don't see a reason to buy the 3G model. And I mean, Sony, I don't know if you guys caught our interview. They admitted the 3G was like, why are we doing that? So, yeah, I mean, James REIC, he was at DICE, and, you know, they talked with him, and I was like, so they're admitting they just did it for shits and giggles. All right, cool. So
Well, I think we all giggled at the Sony press conference when they said they're partnering with AT&T.
Partnered with AT&T. Laughs.
I'm less than like 3 miles from the Sprint headquarters, and I use T-Mobile. Seriously, best service in my opinion. Best service. But again, Vita, no, I'm not going to buy it. I'll gladly take one if somebody wants to gift me one from my family, or if Sony stops, you know, and they don't listen to this and don't know any better, if they want to give me one, I don't see it. So I do hope the thing works. Really do, but I don't see it.
I have kind of a mixed reaction. Initially, I thought, oh, this is awesome. It looks really cool. I was going to buy it. This was last year when they first announced it. Then the 3DS pricing debacle, when that $250 hit me because I had the 3DS pre-ordered, yada, yada, I then realized that, crap, I can't pay $250 for another device. It's not, you know, it's not a big tablet or a phone. It's going to be pretty tough. And
so, you're going to be getting the iPad 3 in a month.
I am not.
And a half.
I'm actually not.
No,
I'm holding off. Yes, I'm actually
no
not.
Way.
you can only blow so many dollars, man. The
iPad 3S, on the other hand.
There you go. And then recently I've started thinking. You know what? I might. Depending on what kind of trade-in offers I get for my old PSP, because I'm on my third PSP right now. The first one I owned for all about 6 hours. I owned a Japanese one about 3 weeks before it was launched in the U.S., and I just flipped it on eBay. Second one I bought on release day in the U.S., thought it was going to be the hot shit. Ran to the store on my way home from work. They had boxes, crates full of these things, and nobody was buying them. because they were $200 or $300 when they first released as well. A few months went by, and I was cleaning out a closet, and lo and behold, there was my PSP that it was sitting there, the PSP 1000, for like probably about 6 months that I had maybe turned on twice. So I sold it, and then I just picked up a third one using my Sony points for my Sony card. So essentially got one for free. I got excited. I thought, oh, I can't, you know, I've been meaning to play these Final Fantasy games that you can't get on PS3 yet, on like Crisis Core and the upgraded versions of Final Fantasy 1 and 2 and Final Fantasy
Crisis 4. Core they don't have on PSN.
Correct.
And it's hard to find game Square, physical.
And
so
Square's failing than Sony's,
yeah.
But
and so I thought, you know, I'm gonna I'll pick this up so I can I'll play these games and I'll be, you know, I'll really enjoy playing these games. And I didn't play it nearly as much because I started playing the 3DS stuff, and I had and brand new games were coming out for other consoles, other devices that I had to put the PSP down. So I have this PSP sitting on my mantle over here with a stack of about 6 or 7 games, 5 of which are unopened, and then Crisis Core and I think a Jak and Daxter game. And that's it, and I kind of feel bad thinking, all right, should I just trade this in along with a bunch of like my Modern Warfare 2 and my old iPhone 3G to take it to GameStop and see how much I can get for a Vita or
$20?
Take it. That's exactly it. I checked this weekend to try and sell my PSP. Sold it this weekend. GameStop wanted to give me $20 for it. Sold it. I ended up selling it to
Amazon.
Mom and Pop Shop.
Amazon's offering $50, I think.
Oh really?
They were offering $75.
Why they sell for $50?
Well, I'm going to have to take a look at that, but it's the cost thing, the $250. It's a hit, and I might just wait until I am interested in picking one up, mostly for the you know, just because of the gaming industry. And
I think
up to date
that if you don't buy one in the next 2 weeks, that feeling will pass.
And that may be it. I may think in a couple weeks. I may be happy that I didn't buy it. I may be having buyer's remorse if I pick it up right away, but you know, what's really interesting is everybody that seems to have gotten a PS3, and this is me kind of going off on a tangent a little bit, there's been a lot of awesome positive reviews about the PS3. Like, almost every outlet has given it raving reviews. I do want to say that not one of those outlets have purchased a PS Vita on their own. They got a lot of the review units, which automatically is you're getting a console to review, and I never quite understand how this works out, especially with a console like the PS Vita, which is super heavy duty. I'd be afraid that if I bought this thing, I'd have buyer's remorse almost instantly because, to tell you the truth, outside of Uncharted, none of the games interest me, and then everything I've heard about Uncharted is
it's middling.
It's not the cat's meow. So if I wanted to play a Wipeout game, I have my PS3 or I have my PSP. If I wanted to play Hot Shots Golf, I have Wii Sports Resort or whatever. I just need something new. I need something compelling to...
Well, Escape Plan, I was almost going to buy a Vita for Escape Plan, and that's getting shoveled into the coal fire.
Well, exactly, and it's not getting any decent reviews for that either. So my fear is that right now we're getting a bunch of things that are console games for the Vita, which I don't want. I want something brand new. I don't want Mod Nation Racers. I don't want Uncharted. I want something that says, hey, fuck, this is awesome. This is a reason to pick up this console that makes it better than any other device out there. And I still have yet to find that.
Lumines.
Lumines, which I just got for my PSP.
Yeah,
for like $3.
It's not a new game.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
The new electronics, fine. Lumines Electronic Symphony. There you go.
Yeah,
there's a couple games I'm excited for, and screw you guys, I'm gonna go play with Jesse Gregory when we both buy.
Yeah, well, you know, go play Mega Man 2.
Why?
So I think okay, let's will I get it? Maybe eventually, depending on what kind of trade-in deals I get, I'll get it sooner rather than later. But it's really gonna depend long term what games are announced for it that are compelling. Because we don't know what's coming out for it after these first 2 months, so.
Well, I mean, we know a couple of things, like Gravity Days is coming out in March, I think, and there's a couple more, like the new Resistance game comes out within that sort of same window and whatnot. There's a couple. Yeah. We know a couple of things.
I mean, but then again, you're putting console games on.
Yeah, I haven't played Resistance 3 yet, so.
Well, no, here's the thing.
If I'm going to play a Resistance game, it's going to be that one.
So this is the knock I had against the 3DS, is that it was all console games that were coming to portable device. As great as Ocarina of Time, the remake was, as great as Star Fox 64, the remake was, there's still just console games. I wanted something brand new that was a different experience. And, you know, it's tough right now. So I think it'll get there, and I think when it does, it'll be really cool. I'm just hopeful that it comes sooner rather than later. Maybe Gravity Days is one of those games that, you know, is going to be like, hey, this is worth purchasing. You're not gonna find this on iOS or 3DS or anything. So, but
I think it's Gravity Rush now. I should correct. In America, it is Gravity Rush now, not Gravity Days. So that game does look interesting to me. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
We'll see. Right. Like I said, E3 is going to be huge for Sony this year and what they showcase on the Vita. I think it's all about the Vita this year at E3.
Well, it was all about the Vita last year.
Yeah, but this year now it's going to be in people's hands, and it's going to be really important for them to show the longevity of this. So, with that said, I think that basically wraps up our podcast for the evening, guys.
Yeah, they'll do it.
I know we had a lot of good
moments. It was very fun.
Yeah, we coughed a lot. We got had a lot of bathroom runs, which the listeners didn't know. I'm sorry about that. I'm recovering from the flu. But I think it went well. We had a lot of good conversation. And Ben, we really want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh no, thank you guys for having me on. I
should
know
stop
in again sometime. You're dead.
Yes, most
definitely. Seriously, Ben, you were a great guest. So.
Oh, thank you very much. Always glad to have you. One of the best.
Ben, where can
guys make me blush?
Where can people get a hold of you?
Me, if you guys want to see my laughable shenanigans, and please, they are laughable. I'm on Twitter at Sinner101GR. That's my video game call sign. That's old. You can also get me on Facebook. Unless I know you, I don't really accept you, so I'm sorry about that. But
I'm kind of like Steven with ethnicities, unless he knows you.
But you can. I do keep it public and open, so. You want to hit me up. And then obviously I do stuff on Industry Gamers. And if you're an Ace Combat guy, I'm one of the senior mods. I've done community management for Ace Combat Assault Horizon. That, not really much, because that game, great game, but you know.
How much involvement did you have with the fist bump QuickTime event?
Oh, my God. What's funny? You know what happens if you don't hit the button?
Okay, I guess I gotta close this out.
What happens when you don't hit the button?
Just does it anyways, doesn't it?
No, stuff blows up. Like, Washington, D.C. actually blows up or something. I forget what actually what it was. But the game loses. You lose because you don't do that quick.
It's amazing.
That was actually – that's why it was funny. Because it seems pretty stupid, but it actually is really funny. Anyways, yes, so that's – I was not involved in any particular way, but – yeah. Anyways, you can get me on Twitter. Thanks, okay. Guys.
Steven, how about you?
I am Steven Strom on Twitter. That's StevenStrom. I think I've finally gotten to the point where I can say that fast and not fuck up my own goddamn name. And you can also find me on sidequesting.com. As usual, I've got some – I'm going to have a lot of reviews coming up within these next couple of weeks here. So, it might already be up.
You cut out there.
Oh, nice. Darkness 2 – I'm going to be writing a lot of reviews here in the next couple of weeks, so Darkness 2 should be the first one. By the time this is up, that'll probably be up already, so you can go check that out. And I'll have a lot of stuff coming up on side questing here pretty soon, so check it out.
Okay.
Oh, and yeah.
Go ahead.
Did we say review and rate us on iTunes?
No, we don't say that, because if they want to do it, they will do it.
Okay, well, maybe they just, you know, maybe they forget. Maybe they don't remember enough. I'm just saying.
So now you're calling our listeners idiots.
Yeah.
You're isolating everyone tonight, Steven.
Yeah, I know. I'm racist against our listeners. Funnily enough, growing up in North Dakota, the only races I am familiar with are white and Wendigos. So, that is an issue. Well, that's not true.
You can find me on Twitter at LMM and everywhere else that handle as well. You can find Dally at Cool Rats.
Cool Rats with a K-E-W-L, right?
I think everybody knows that by now, but whatever. If he's not here, we'll let him tell everyone, okay? Dally, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you can find me at Cool Rats.
He's Sonic now.
Hey, what's up, everybody? You guys seen Shadow the Hedgehog or Knuckles the Echidna? I've just been passing through.
Okay.
Let's talk about my games.
Yeah. I guess we're going to say goodbye. So,
bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Steven! Thank you.